Bickley and Murata mornings from 6 to 10.
Bickley and Murata.
It's the greatest show on earth.
Bickley and Murata.
Good morning and welcome.
To the world.
Dan Bickley.
Sports, man. Sports.
Vince Murata.
It's a power-packed morning zoo. Are you kidding me?
Bickley and Murata.
Spectacular.
This is the greatest show.
Bickley and Murata.
I love this show. This is the greatest show in the history of radio.
It's the greatest radio show ever.
Bickley and Murata.
I hate everything about this show. This is the worst show in the world.
We have made it to the end of another week. Welcome, everybody, to a Football Friday, a Ryder Cup weekend for those who like golf. And I've
you disclosed something to me before the show today, because you love golf more than just about anybody that I associate with.
Okay.
But you're not a huge Ryder Cup guy.
No, it's okay. I'm starting to maybe change my opinion a little bit just based on how crazy this scene is in Kohler, Wisconsin, where they make toilets, by the way, Jarrett. You should really
Kohler,
be in
this. Yeah.
Kohler, Wisconsin. That, yeah. Right, exactly.
Oh, yeah, eat that much cheese.
It's the toilet capital of the world. the thing with the Ryder Cup, I like the concept, but watching golfers try to act like team athletes, they're just dorks. What a dork.
What a dorks.
Right, what a dorks. You'll watch, and there'll be a couple of golfers after a key putt, and they'll try to high-five each other, and they'll miss.
Oh, or no. They do the thing that annoys me the most. The high-five, and then they grab the hand.
Right.
Oh,
and
the Oprah.
Right. They just don't play a team sport, and now they're acting like they're, you know, part of a team, and they are part of a team, but these guys are not never wired to be part of a team. Never.
Yeah. They're teammates with people that they compete against the entire rest of the year.
Right.
Yeah, like Bryson DeChambeau and Brooks Koepka are teammates this weekend.
Right.
Besties.
Yeah.
Now,
they hate each other.
Are they actually paired together? I read that it might happen. Now, that would be something.
They are not today. Koepka and Daniel Berger today. But this applies to other sports, too.
That might be one of your most underrated impressions/accents. The East Coast guy.
The Boston guy.
The Boston guy.
The New England
guy. That's right. The Boston guy.
I assume you're a tennis guy, too. I assume you feel the same way about the Davis Cup.
I absolutely do.
How about wrestling? Wrestling is an individual sport that is presented as a team sport.
You piqued my interest for a second.
Really? Yeah.
I thought you meant professional wrestling.
No, he means grappling.
No, I know.
Like actual wrestling.
I thought you were talking about
the one that's not predetermined who's going to win.
Right. Oh, don't be naive.
Yeah. Right. Don't be naive. All right. So it's a Ryder Cup weekend. I will watch a little of that, but it's really a Football Friday. So let's get into it. Jarrett?
Splash. The stories making waves in the sports world. The Splash.
Get him all coming.
The Splash, brought to you by Presidential Pools, Arizona's number one pool builder. See why at presidentialpools.com.
Cardinals, Football Friday means Cardinals' final practice of the week before they head to Florida to take on the Jaguars Sunday in week three. Still no DeAndre Hopkins on the practice field Thursday. He's missed both practices this week with a ribs injury. Kelvin Beachum also missed Thursday. To echo Jarrett's question from earlier in the week, Kelvin Beachum also out with a ribs. A cornerback, Byron Murphy Jr., added to the injury report yesterday as a non-participant with an ankle injury. So certainly three big pieces there to be concerned about, regardless of who is providing the opposition for the Cardinals.
That's a good point. It's a really good point. And when you look at a guy like DeAndre Hopkins, you wonder if there's really cause for concern. That would worry me if he was not part of the offense. See how it plays out.
Yeah, I got some thoughts on that. We'll definitely get into it as the show goes on today. Thursday night football, Carolina Panthers lost running back Christian McCaffrey to a hamstring injury in the second quarter, but they still had enough to beat the Houston Texans 24-9. To push their record to 3-0, Sam Darnold threw for 300 yards, ran for two touchdowns, and the Panther defense continued its strong early season play. They held the Texans to just 191 yards in the game, which is exactly what they're averaging in terms of yards allowed through three games. Pretty pretty historic stuff.
Yeah. Well, they were also facing an offense that didn't have a lot of it was a pop gun offense they were facing. But that's an early surprise. That Carolina team's 3-0. That's an early surprise.
Keep pounding.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, Davis Mills made his first start for the Texans and was
Well, about what you'd expect.
Yeah. Interesting news from Colts practice on Thursday. Former Cardinals quarterback Brett Hundley reportedly took the bulk of the starters' reps ahead of second-year man Jacob Eason. Carson Wentz is recovering from ankle sprains, so the quarterback position is up in the air. There's not a whole lot of optimism that Wentz will be able to play. Hundley is currently, by the way, on the Indianapolis practice squad. They've got until Saturday to decide whether to elevate him to the active roster.
Wow.
Also, if I'm correct, he sprained both his ankles, Carson Wentz?
He did.
Have you been listening to the show this week, Jarrett?
That's extra.
Wow.
To sprain both your ankles.
Keep going. This is great.
Damn,
that was one of the first Sarah the Ruthless moments on the morning.
Yeah, I like that.
I had to.
You remarked that one. Man. That was good.
Phenomenal.
Singed all the hair off your back, Jerry.
How often do you hear somebody?
No, I wish. I was thinking about that actually because we got a big public appearance tonight.
That's right.
We do.
Hopefully, nobody will see your back.
Hairy neck and back.
D-backs general manager Mike Hazen had stated earlier in the week that a decision on manager Torey Lovello's future would be made by season's end, and he wasn't kidding. That decision came yesterday. D-backs extend their manager for 1 year through 2022 with a team option for 2023. Lovello's managed this entire year without knowing his future, and the results, not by 100% fault of him, have been disastrous. Diamondbacks are 49-104, worst record in baseball, tied with Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
There's still a chance that the Diamondbacks could surpass their highest single season loss total of 111.
Uh-huh.
During that season, interesting to note, the club fired manager Bob Brenly, who had won the World Series 3 years earlier. After a 29-50 start, Lovello, of course, was manager of the year in 2017 in the National League, his first season, but their winning percentage since, .449.
Yeah, this is, to me, the only way you can really distill this and get to the true essence of what happened is I think they rewarded Torey Lovello for tanking a season. Nobody will come out and say it, but I think that's what we've all witnessed. Mike Hazen is too smart of a general manager to really honestly believe that the team he brought into the season could compete. Torey Lovello's too smart of a manager to do some of the idiotic things he's done this season. This has just been a tank job. And I'm okay with it. I'm okay with it because the manager is not the issue here.
Yeah.
This was not a team that was even remotely capable of winning this year.
Yeah, so the charge is on the front office to give him
without
something to work with.
Without a
doubt. The winning percentage did rise a bit yesterday. D-backs rallied to beat the Braves 6-4 to avoid a four-game sweep. Carson Kelly's three-run home run off Jacob Webb highlighted a five-run seventh inning to give the D-backs the lead. Hey, everybody, look, the Dodgers are in town for a weekend series.
Oh, that'll be
Chase
fun.
Field. L.A. is 14-2 in the 16 games between the two teams this season. It's Humberto Castellanos against Tony Gonsolin in the opener. 6:40 first pitch, 6 o'clock pregame here on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station.
You know what Chase Field's going to look like this weekend?
I'm guessing it's 98%? Going to be blue.
Yeah, it's going to be blue.
First full weekend of Pac-12 football is upon us. 6 conference games on Saturday. For now, unranked Arizona State, that means a home game against Colorado in Tempe. Of course, ASU coming off the sloppy road loss at BYU. Colorado has been slowed by one of the worst offenses in the entire country, 126th out of 130 teams in offense this year. Kickoff is at 7:30 Saturday night. You can hear it on ESPN 620 AM and 98.7 FM HD2. Arizona, fresh off their 15th loss, they start out conference play with a tough one. They got the third-ranked Oregon Ducks in Eugene.
Oh, that should be fun.
Ducks are currently a 28.5-point favorite.
That seems low.
U of A, I thought so, too.
U of A was a 31-point favorite versus NAU, and we know what happened.
That game kicks off 7:30. You can catch the carnage.
It's
I mean,
personal,
the action.
Jarrett. It's
on
personal.
On ESPN.
Hashtag, it's personal.
Ryder Cup getting underway at Whistling Straits in Wisconsin. The European team doing some expert pandering, showing up with cheese heads, of course, and uniforms trimmed in green and gold. On the scoreboard right now, it's Sergio Garcia and John Rahm, one up on Justin Thomas and Jordan Spieth. Paul Casey and Victor Hovland all square with Dustin Johnson and Colin Morikawa. Lee Westwood, Matt Fitzpatrick, one up on Brooks Koepka and Daniel Berger. And the Mercury did not have Diana Taurasi last night, but they survived a single elimination WNBA playoff contest against the Liberty, 83-82. Came down to free throws in the final second of the game. Brianna Turner hit one of them. Mercury have another
single elimination in basketball. I'm not sure I like that.
They got another one on Sunday against the defending league champion Seattle Storm on the road. That game tips off Sunday at noon. There you go. There's your splash for Friday, September 24th. Cardinals getting ready to head to Jacksonville, but they got some guys that aren't practicing. How much of that is a concern at this point? We'll get into it next. It's Bickley and Murata on this Football Friday, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Wow. Keep going. This is great.
Football Friday with Bickley and Murata. Presented by 72 Soul, 98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station.
I don't, the way we played last week definitely got our players' attentions. We didn't play like we know we can. And so watching that tape yesterday, I believe our players understand what we need to do to get better. And I expect us to try and improve this week.
Cliff Kingsbury earlier this week, when asked if he views this as a potential trap game, I'm very distracted, Bick, before we get into Cardinals talk.
Yeah, no,
come
you're
on.
Right.
Come on,
come
man.
On, Jarrett.
Come on, Jarrett.
Come on, Jarrett. Playing Creed.
I apologize to anybody in our listening audience with any shred of musical taste.
Okay. I agree with you. I don't like Creed either. The music is not the problem, though, of Creed songs.
The existence of the band is the problem.
Is the problem.
Murder and Seed and Murder.
That's good.
When did Eddie Vedder become the lead singer of Creed?
I always thought they had, like, generic Pearl Jam vibes.
I will admit, back when that album got huge, I did own it.
I did not.
Yeah.
I did not.
But I saw the error of my ways. Isn't that what we're all about? Is improving as human beings?
Totally.
Progress, not perfection.
But I am seconding Vinny. No more Creed, Jarrett. Bye bye. Okay. All right.
Duly noted.
Is DeAndre Hopkins? Does he have a significant rib injury that's going to keep him out of the game? And could that impact the offense? I think that's the big question out of these injury issues that we're looking at. I mean, Marco Wilson, Kelvin Beachum, these are both obviously, you know, working components of the team. But DeAndre Hopkins, that to me is interesting.
It is. I mean, 2 days without practice, and we know he doesn't normally practice on Wednesdays,
right.
But when it's a body part listed in the reason for missing practice as opposed to not injury-related,
right.
There's a concern. When it's 2 days in a row, there's a concern. We know about DeAndre Hopkins' history as well, that he usually plays through stuff that's bothering him. A.J. Green said as much.
Don't miss games. He'd be fine.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of the weirdness about this, is that I think we have been trained watching DeAndre Hopkins just to be comforted by that he shows up on Sunday. So there's kind of this, whatever. But like the difference here is, like you said, there's an actual body part attached to the injury report. Rib injuries, and as you brought up earlier in the week, that may partially explain why he disappeared from the offense in the second half last week.
Mm-hmm. We saw the offense mm-hmm. actually kind of hum a little bit in the
yep.
second half, especially through the passing game, spreading the ball around, really after the first quarter,
right.
Without DeAndre Hopkins doing much. So, obviously when your best receiver is iffy, and, you know, that's the term we'll go with now on Friday morning before a Sunday game, it's a concern.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a lot to mitigate concern with the way the Cardinals operated offensively against a better, is Minnesota's defense better than Jacksonville's? Probably a little bit, but at least they got experience. You know, and I think that was a confidence building game for a lot of members of that wide receiver core. AJ Green got his first touchdown. Rondale Moore had his first 100 yard game. Christian Kirk continued to make big catches. So if DeAndre Hopkins can't go, at least they have that to fall back on.
Yeah, and maybe the biggest would be Byron Murphy Jr. suddenly showing up on the injury report with an ankle injury.
I think that one is the more concerning one, quite honestly.
It might be, especially if Marco Wilson is limited. You're talking about a secondary that wasn't deep or experienced to begin with, and now they might be nicked up on top of it. I don't know how much to fear the Jaguars' offense, but I will say this. It's... even though we look at this as a game that the Cardinals should win, and obviously we all believe that, I think they should believe that, we have to remember this is the NFL, and for a while last night, the Texans were hanging with the Panthers. It wasn't pretty, but this is the kind of thing that that can worry you if you're a Cardinal fan, to get trapped in one of those games that just is a slog. You know, and then you give an inferior team a chance to steal it at the end, and that would be a recipe for disaster. So, the injury, yeah, this will be something worth monitoring. That's for certain.
Yeah, I mean, there's no other way to say it. And hopefully, I mean, when the injury report comes out today, you'll see participation from DeAndre Hopkins. That would make people feel a lot better. But I think there's also a lot of people that do have, you know, some amount of concern about DeAndre Hopkins that hear those words of AJ Green rattling through their head. He doesn't miss games. He is a gamer, so we shall see. You know, going back to the Murphy injury and couple that with the Wilson injury, Cliff Kingsbury said earlier this week, too early to tell whether or not Marco Wilson will be back. We'll see if he's back or affected, whatever that looks like. If Murphy can't go, he's your number one cornerback right now. The Cardinals were pressed into using Antonio Hamilton after Marco Wilson got hurt last week against Minnesota. Vance Joseph spoke to the media yesterday and was asked about what he saw from Antonio Hamilton.
Yeah, I was pleased with him. He played really well. I mean, he made three or four, you know, very quiet, big plays in that game. You know, but he's a veteran guy that we picked up about 2 weeks ago, and he's been intentional in his learning of our defense, and he's been great for Jeff on special teams. But as a nickel in that game, he made four or five big plays that no one saw but us.
Which is great, but do you want to rely on a guy that was just elevated from the practice squad, a guy who's been there for 2 weeks, to use Vance Joseph's own words? Again, that's the more concerning developing situation for me.
Yeah. To me, this is it has to be a no excuses Sunday for the Arizona Cardinals. You're going to have to just come with the physicality. You're going to have to come with the passion. You're going to have to come with the character that you're not overlooking a team like the Jacksonville Jaguars, and just find a way to get it done. I would like J.J. Watt to have a really big game. I would like this defensive line to dictate like they did in week one. I'd like them to... Well, I mean, with any rookie quarterback, you can rattle them. I'd like them to get Trevor Lawrence off his mark early, force some turnovers. You see these young quarterbacks, and you brought this up yesterday, and you're right on the money. For all the hype and for all the conversations, so many of them are all struggling. Because you get into it, and it's real, and it's like, holy bleep. Right? Look at I heard an interview with Zach Wilson yesterday, and Zach Wilson... He was trying to explain how he can be better with ball security, but in listening to his answer, it just sounded like he was swimming. I'm like, oh, man, is this dude lost 2 weeks into a season? So this is a young quarterback, and it's a great opportunity for the Cardinal defense to tilt this thing early.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not that Trevor Lawrence is not... talented.
No, he is. He is.
And
sure,
he's got some pretty capable offensive players there, although it didn't look like it pretty much. After their first drive last week against Denver, they didn't do much offensively. But if you want, it's just a snapshot of the difference between college football and the NFL in terms of Trevor Lawrence. Last year at Clemson, he threw 334 passes, 5 interceptions. He's already got 5 picks this year through 2 games. So yeah, the windows are
Zach
smaller.
Zach Wilson had 2 on his first 2 throws, predictably.
Joe Burrow, who's in his second year, right. Basically in terms of experience now, probably still a rookie, but he had three consecutive passes that were intercepted?
He had 3 consecutive passes that were intercepted, so it's... Yeah, it's. I think there's been a lot of rude awakenings, and then this weekend you've got Justin Fields taking... the field for the Bears. And I know this, obviously, coming from Chicago. There's an energy in Chicago right now. of excitement. They feel like this is the quarterback 100-plus years in the waiting for them. And it's like, okay.
Careful what you wish
careful
for.
Careful what you wish for. Right.
Yeah, so, if he stinks on Sunday, can you imagine what the reaction
would
will be?
This would not, and we'll get back into this later, but that to me is paramount. Not letting Trevor Lawrence have that kind of game that launches his career.
Yeah, you can text your thoughts on it to the FanDuel text line at 620-620 right now. Coming up next, D-backs have made their decision on Torey Lovello. He's back! Was it the right one? We'll get into it next. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings live from the Ak-Chin Community Studios, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
I'm not going to be satisfied just because I have this extension. I'm thinking about some of the bitterness that I've had this year that I've got to work through because of what we've gone through, and cycle that and learn from it. I think that's what you know winners do. And it's not just me. I want to say this organization, winning organizations, figure things out and learn from some of their mistakes. And that's I'm going to work as hard as I can over the next several weeks and beyond to make sure that we're growing, and I'm growing in the right direction.
Torey Lovello, manager of the Arizona Diamondbacks, something that will be the case throughout 2022, possibly throughout 2023. D-backs announcing an extension for their manager who was in the final year of his contract in this awful glut of a slog of a season. I will say this, though. Since the Diamondbacks made this public, they're undefeated. 1-0.
Okay.
You take that uncertainty away.
See what could have been.
Right.
Give them a little security and boom.
See how the team responded.
This announcement came out after we were off the air yesterday, and immediately, this is one of those stories where I'm like, I have to see what people are saying about it. So you go to social media, and I don't know if the Torey Lovello supporters were just kind of absent or quiet. They were certainly more quiet than the Torey Lovello critics who can't believe that the Diamondbacks came to this decision after this season.
Well, you pointed out earlier that Bob Brenly was manager of a team that set the bar that this team might actually exceed, the low bar, and he was fired. And this was a guy that had won the World Series a few years earlier.
3 years earlier.
So, again, generally, if you're a baseball fan and you've been watching this dreck for a year and a half, what you're looking at, you're looking for somebody to stand up and say, we are not about this. We do not condone this. We do not reward this. And that's what has got people ticked off. I would say that that's very natural. I would also say that if you look at this Diamondbacks team and you look at where blame needs to be apportioned, it's really not the manager. This is a dreadful baseball team.
But normally when you have teams that are this bad, Bick, historically throughout baseball, you know, you have to make a change.
Yeah, you do.
If nothing else, it's symbolic, or we can't accept this.
That's
and we can't fire all the players.
I understand that.
So, and I'm not saying I'm against this extension because I am just like you. This was not Torey Lovello's fault. This was an organizational failure. We had Mike Hazen on a couple weeks ago or last week, it was 2 weeks ago. And he was just beside himself talking about, you know, especially the bullpen. That was not a major league bullpen to begin the season, and then it got hit by injuries. I mean, how many guys have pitched for the Diamondbacks out of the bullpen this year that weren't even part of the organization when this thing started?
Yeah. I think the important thing here is when you look at Torey Lovello, you say to yourself, is this guy a really good manager if he has a really good team? And I think that's what you have to focus on. Not so much the one-loss record. I look at Torey Lovello as a manager and I say, okay, how do I grade this guy? What is this guy all about? I see a guy who's a very good communicator. I see a guy who's relatable. I see a guy that certainly would be approachable. If you were a baseball player on the team and you walked down the hallway and his office door was open, you wouldn't. I don't think you'd feel any trepidation at all at popping your head in and saying, hey, Skip, can I talk to you about something? I think he's really good at that. Can he be the hard ass that you need to be? Does he have too long of a leash? Does he have too much loyalty to guys? These are all things that I've heard about him. There are times when he butchers the handling of the bullpen, but you know what? Most major league managers do.
They do.
So I look at this and I think, all right, what you said is right. If you're a baseball team, you do need to make a statement that we do not tolerate this guy. Somebody has to pay. I think the fact that with all the extenuating circumstances, what's going on with Mike Hazen and his family and the leave of absence, everything, I really believe this organization decided we are going to have to bite not just a bullet this year, but I think it's going to continue. I don't think it's going to be all that much better next year.
Personally. I don't think so either. I would expect a much different looking roster, but it's hard to picture what that's going to look like. Are they going to sprinkle in veterans, or is it going to be just nothing but young guys? I mean, there's some guys that they were counting on to be veteran leaders that haven't panned out, that they could be gone. I don't know what it's going to look like.
There's also people that you thought were going to be cornerstones, like Carson Kelly and Zach Gallen, that are having very disappointing seasons, and then all of a sudden now you don't know what is your core even going forward.
Carson Kelly kind of gets a mulligan. He hasn't been good after his injury. He was really good prior to that. Sure. I think you run him back next year and see what you have in him. I agree with you on this. I don't know how many of these young guys who have gotten time this year are actually going to be. I mean, they're serviceable players. Pavin Smith, Josh Rojas. These guys, they're good, but are they that good? I don't know about that.
What's their upside?
That's what I don't know about.
The one guy to be in that group to be really excited about is Dalton Varsho.
Yeah.
And we're going to find out if this was a second half anomaly or if this is the player that Dalton Varsho is capable of being.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. And I think when you bring up the concept of somebody's got to pay for this, a couple of guys already paid for it earlier this season. In June, the hitting coaches, Eric Hinsky and Darnell Coles, were let go. And that's another way to approach it that organizations do when they get to the end of a season, if they're going to keep their manager. And I actually want to go do the research to see how many 100 lost managers actually get a second chance to follow that up, because it can't be that common. But I expect a lot of turnover in the coaching
staff. So I've been conflicted about all of this because it just seems like the Diamondbacks are just skating by in this period of just wretched baseball. And I look at this, and I really do believe in Mike Hazen, and I've said that steadfastly. But I look at this also, and I think there are times when the Diamondbacks really believe they're smarter than the rest of the league. And there are times when it seems like they're trying to reinvent the game. And I wrote about some of these incidents, the tunneling theory. Suddenly, the Diamondbacks offense a few years ago had this philosophy that they were supposed to subscribe to. The team said they were just offering it to players. But you know how that is. If your bosses come to you and say, hey, really like you to look into this, you probably are. Remember the entire team was slumping all at once? You remember how bad Paul Goldschmidt looked at the plate during that period of time? That was one example. This positional versatility thing that became a mantra with this baseball team. They are a wretched defensive team.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And I want to elaborate on that later. I mean, there's only a certain number of guys. And that's a philosophy you can employ if you've got guys that are proving that they can play multiple positions.
Without a doubt.
And I hate to pick on one guy, but, I mean, look at the error numbers for Josh Van Meter at third base. And it's been that way throughout his minor league career.
Yep. Also, a consistently frustrating thing for me is the organization's philosophy, we're not going to spend money on the bullpen.
Yeah, that's a bad one.
We don't need to spend money in the bullpen. We, can just assemble these journeyman guys and get through it.
Right. The organizational policy of having prescribed days off for guys, it's garbage. Well, you don't mess with a hot streak in baseball. Anybody who's ever played the game knows that.
You sounded like Crash Davis just then.
Well, it's true. And yet they've subscribed to this. So there's these things that they need to kind of dial. I think they get in their players' heads too much, Vinny.
They might, and it's easy to fall back and say that's the case when you look at that win-loss record. It's embarrassing, but Torey Lovello will be back next year, possibly for 2023 with that team option. You can text your thoughts on it to the FanDuel text line at 620-620 right now. Coming up, some NFL hash marks, including Thursday Night Football and a change to Wild Card Weekend, among more. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings live from the Ak Chin Community Studios, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Football Friday with Bickley and Murata, presented by 72 Soul, 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
We're starting to find our identity as an offense, and I think I just gotta, again, whatever play is called, we just gotta execute that play, and that's my job, is to get us in the right play and make sure that you know, we're kind of hitting on all cylinders and that the offense is moving in the right direction.
Sam Darnold, quarterback of the undefeated Carolina Panthers, 3-0 in his first three starts with his new team after the Jets got rid of him and went to Zach Wilson. They win on Thursday Night Football last night, 24-9 over the Houston Texans in what was really the second in a 3 or 4 week stretch of diehard type of telecast for Thursday Night Football. You had Washington and New York last week. The game turned out to be pretty good. Last night's game,
yeah.
You know, yeah, what Thursday, I agree. You know what Thursday is next week? Jacksonville and Cincinnati.
Oh, come on. All right. Yeah, I tried to get into last night's game. I couldn't. I just could not. It just was not happening. I rewatched the last episode of that Mets documentary.
Did you?
I did. I did. There was nothing compelling about the Texans-Panthers, so let's move on.
Except for the McCaffrey injury.
Yeah, okay. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, he was off to a good start. There was a time after he left the game in the second quarter, the Panthers' offense completely bogged down. And you just start to wonder, okay, this is now the second straight year with that nagging type injury. And it was a weird play, too, mm-hmm. because you could see the way he stepped on the play that he got hurt. He tweaked it, and he kept running on it. Normally, you'll see when somebody feels something in their hamstring, you'll see an extreme effort by that athlete not to put any more weight or take another step on that leg, and he kept running on it. So I wonder if that made the problem worse. I guess we'll find out. Carolina will not be undefeated long. Well, Christian McCaffrey can't play.
Of course not. Of course not. And I think it was another example that how smart is it to invest first-round picks in running backs? Christian McCaffrey looked like a game-changing kind of guy, but now the injuries are starting to mount. You look at Sony Michel, Saquon Barkley, the questions about him. Najee Harris, people thought he was going to be the perfect fit in Pittsburgh, and that hasn't happened yet. A little early to proclaim him a bust or anything like that, but, you know, it's I think these are some of the lessons in the NFL. The running backs and their durability, I don't know, it's changing.
Yeah, here was Jeremy Fowler on the Christian McCaffrey injury and says, don't tie it to the other one.
Yeah, I think it's unfair because, like, hamstring injuries are sort of an epidemic in the NFL. I mean, they're just everywhere. You see high-level athletes getting them. I don't know if they're not stretching or what, but, like, it sort of confounds teams a little bit. And it can pop up at any time. And so it's really independent of his past injuries, which I believe were the ankle and the shoulder that held him out last year. And those healed correctly, and he had, I heard he was awesome. All camp and preseason, you know, just consummate pro, looked great, looked like he's best as he's ever been, running with the burst that they're used to. So nobody could have really expected this, and, you know, he was always going to get a big workload. I guess, you know, they could have eased him in a little bit, but he was fully healthy and ready to go, and he wanted the ball, and so they gave it to him. And so I think it's just sort of one of those freaky things.
Yeah, one more note, not specifically to that Thursday night game, but after the Jacksonville-Cincinnati game, there's actually a really good Thursday night game, and that's the Rams and the Seahawks. But that is so not the norm for Thursday night football. And I get why they do it, and we have these discussions every year, Bick, but this rule that every team's got to play a Thursday night game puts the league in a terrible situation, puts the fans in a terrible situation, because more often than not, you're watching undesirable teams play in a very, very desirable time slot because of that rule.
It's such a stupid rule, too, because it's not like they shorten it by 3 days. It's not like they're making some teams play Saturday, you know, so it shortens their week. Yeah. They're so severely shortening the week for no other reason other than to just get, you know, money and get ratings that you can't logically say that it's fair.
It's not. Well, they make it fair by requiring everybody to play at least one Thursday night
to
game.
To shorten their week that much, that dramatically, not Saturday, not Friday, but Thursday.
Yeah,
well,
true.
And it's, and we've talked about this for years. It's just, it's not healthy for the players. It's not. The sport is so violent, you should give X amount of rest and recuperation every single week. It's a blatant money play from the league that contradicts everything that they say about their concern for player safety.
Well, here's another change to the upcoming NFL schedule. The league made it official today. It was leaked last night, and it did become actual today, that the NFL will hold its first Monday night playoff game January 17th. There will be a Monday night wild card weekend game that will kick off at 8:15 Eastern time.
See, now that's also, that's another blatant money play.
Absolutely.
Because the one thing about the playoffs that the NFL has always been real careful to do is just to kind of keep that rest in the level playing field as far as that goes. Giving a team a Monday night game, that's difficult. That's like a day and a half less now rest and recuperation for that team going into the next game.
Yeah, I mean, because I think that would ensure the next weekend during the divisional round of the playoffs, that Monday night winner would have to play on Sunday, correct?
To. You would, yeah. They better not make them play on a Saturday. That would be really bad. From a football fan's perspective, you're probably thinking, cool, Monday night playoff game? That's interesting.
Is that true, though, or is it more fun to have it all sort of packed into one weekend?
Well, that's the way it's always been, so that's the way football fans think of it. But Roger Goodell and the league doesn't think of it that way. It's
right.
Like,
well,
we're not capitalizing on the calendar during the playoffs. We need Monday night football during the playoffs.
Yeah, and I think because there's going to be an extra playoff game, it's already going to feel stuffed, even with the Monday night game.
I will say, though, with the way they did the playoffs last year, it was pretty cramped. When there was three games on Saturday and Sunday during that first weekend,
uh-huh,
we're like, that's a lot of football.
Yeah.
I don't know what one game difference really means in the grand scheme of things, but I agree with you. This is just taking over more territory.
It's partially why the playoff schedule this week, or I'm sorry, the playoff schedule this year is partially why this Rams game, this Rams-Buccaneers game feels so big this weekend. One team in each conference gets a first round bye. That's a gigantic asset to have in the NFL playoffs. And only one team gets it, as opposed to two. And so that's going to, I'm real curious to see what that's going to look and feel like, especially when it comes to December football. So, but listen, this is where we're going, man. Football every night of the week. Let's do it.
How surprised are you that Green Bay, San Francisco, which is a good game too, that is the Sunday night game and not the Rams in Tampa Bay this week?
Yeah, I'm a little bit surprised by that. I think probably they're taking a look at respective market sizes, maybe. I don't know. A star power with Aaron Rodgers. I don't know. I think the Rams-Bucks are the bigger game. But I do think, from my standpoint, from somebody who's integrated in the NFC West, this is a huge moment for Jimmy Garoppolo. If Jimmy Garoppolo does not play well, and or they lose to the Packers, it will expedite Trey Lance taking his job.
Oh, you're right. Because of the enormity of the audience,
right,
the buzz around that game, that it's on Sunday
Without
Night Football
doubt.
On NBC.
Without
I think
doubt.
You're right.
So this is going to be a prove it kind of game for Jimmy Garoppolo. Just like this weekend is a prove it kind of game for Sean McVay. A lot of people look at him and go, dude, you scored 3 points in a Super Bowl and Bill Belichick worked you. And what do you do in big games? What do you do against a team like the Bucs? Because you know B.A. and Todd Bowles, they're coming at him.
What does Matthew Stafford do in a big game that he's hardly played any of in his whole career?
There's that, too. But he doesn't have Matthew Stafford, I don't think, sort of has the reputation of, you know, Sean McVay has been a wonder boy in the NFL.
Wunderkind.
Yeah. No, he has been. So that's why I think this weekend is an interesting litmus test across the league for a lot of different dudes. Yeah.
And teams, yeah. And I think that the Cardinals are there as well, especially defensively, because we've seen one good performance by the Cardinals defense and one not so good. Which Cardinals defense shows up in Jacksonville on Sunday? That and more next. It's Bickley and Marotta on this Football Friday, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.